and welcome to today's Raging Bull podcast. We occasionally like to add guest interviews from traders and experts from Raging Bull's Elite Traders Chat Room. In the Raging Bull Elite Chat Room, we hold live trading sessions with Raging Bull's traders, elite members, and our invited guests. These sessions are hosted by our Elite Chat Room host, Hitha Herzog. It's my pleasure now to introduce Hitha and one of our special guests to the Raging Bull podcast.
Hey, Elite Room, it's Hitha Herzog again, and I am back with Jason Feldman. He is the CEO and founder of Vault Health. Jason, thanks so much for being in here with us.
Hitha, it's good to see you. I'm delighted to be here today.
So it's interesting. You have a very interesting business model. Tell us, what is Vault Health, and what was the impetus of you starting Vault Health?
You know, I was at Amazon before joining the healthcare world. The impetus was that I wanted to come in and disrupt the hell out of healthcare. I mean, healthcare is destroying us as a nation in terms of cost, in terms of accessibility, in terms of just the level of care that most people believe they have access to. And I knew for sure that men, as it turned out, 70% of men were not getting any consistent care. And in fact, if you ask them when the last time they had consistent care, most would say it was when they had a pediatrician. Mm-hmm. So we said, what will it take, guys, to get you back into healthcare? Because guess what? You're dying 5 years younger than women. And you're mostly dying of cardiovascular disease, all preventable. And when the guys told us anything to do with their sexual performance, their physical performance, or their cognitive performance would get them back thinking about their healthcare and do something about it, we decided to build a business based on that. And here we are.
So what's actually happening now is while you're focusing on men's healthcare and getting men back to seeing the doctor and getting themselves thinking about their health, a pandemic started to rage around us here in this country and globally. What made you change? Well, your business model changed a little bit. Tell me how that model changed and what you are focusing on now.
So it was on, I will not forget this. I was actually sitting on the New York Stock Exchange floor on March the 9th with our chief medical officer. We were having an interview on the floor of the exchange when we looked over to the side and saw that the market was crashing. And you know, I this is one of those selfie moments. It was a little bit embarrassing, actually. We took a selfie and said, we probably should remember this. This is probably really bad, and we should remember we were here. And we went back to the office afterwards and said, this is for real. As in, stay-at-home orders are starting to be issued across the country. The city of New York, where our office is based, was shutting down. And we looked at our people and said, what the hell are we going to do? This is for real. So we're not going to make PPE. None of us know how to sew. We're not going to make masks.
Right.
You know, we've got to do something. As it turns out, we've built this incredible platform for telehealth. We have a network across the entire United States. We're practicing this men's health business. And we had an amazing relationship. This was the key moment where we thought, let's connect one and one and make three out of this. An amazing relationship with Rutgers University. They have a genomics lab called RUCDR. And they were working on a test. We were working with them on something else, but we knew they were working on a test for COVID using saliva. And as it turns out, saliva is a really great way to capture virus because the alternative is sticking one of those horrible nasal swabs way up into your brain. And I would say the brain tickler, except it's really painful and very unpleasant.
I got one of those. I totally know what you're talking about.
Horrible, right? This is the worst torture device ever. Yeah. But it's the only way that you can effectively find out if you have somebody infected with COVID. So as it turns out, we're having this conversation with Rutgers. They're saying, no. We have a way that you can spit in a tube and we can use the same genetic test, the same genetic markers that we're using for nasal swabs with saliva. And we're going through this authorization process with the FDA. And if you ride along with us and we can do this together, we can build a program that will allow us to make this the first of its kind at-home test. As it turns out, the FDA then goes through an authorization process, says, here you go, Rutgers. Within 10 days, we had turned our entire company into a massive testing operation. And we launched across the entire country the ability to test people at home safely using telehealth. And we could medically supervise a test. And we were able to get UPS. So this was one of my favorite things. I called up the CEO of UPS. I just thought this was a great opportunity to see if anybody else will help us. Right. They did. And they said, we will fast ship for you and we will fast ship back from the customer the test results to the lab in New Jersey. And we will get those results turned around in 24 to 48 hours. So we have the fastest, safest test available. And the best two parts of the test, you're at home, nowhere near anybody who's sick. And you're at home, nowhere near anybody who has to use PPE, which we know is very scarce. And you are able to get the results you need to get back to life. And so we said, we're going to do three things. We're going to make testing available to anybody in America that needs it. Remember, testing a couple months ago was very limited. No one knew where to get it. We're going to make testing available to corporations, universities, schools, anybody at play that needed to make sure that their members, their constituents, their employees needed to be safe. And then, and maybe most importantly, we were going to get fast results that were accurate to people as quickly as we could. And we've done all of that. And so now we're getting America back to work. That's what we're helping to do.
And that is the most important. Now, what I what concerns me, and I think a lot of people too, is, and we're hearing this in the media and we're hearing this, you know, in so many different outlets, and especially talking amongst ourselves, is the accuracy of these tests. Now they're saying that even the antibody tests may be 50% accurate, and there's so many different levels to these tests that may or may not, there's different various levels of accuracy.
Yeah, for sure.
How can you make sure that, especially because it's at home, and while there's benefits to doing tests at home, you know, you have to go blow through your PPE, you can do this on your own sort of time and dime, and you also have to, you know, you're using saliva, which is not sticking a swab up your nose. But speak to the accuracy of it.
I love it. So the opportunity to do testing at home required us to be able to make absolutely certain that we could put a protocol in place. And as I said, using telehealth, making sure that when we sent the test kit to you, we would be able to first identify you. So make sure that you're who you say you are. Send you a test tube where we would know, in fact, that this test tube is assigned to you, that the serial number on it was the one that was assigned to you, guide you through the spit. Now, you would think this would be a relatively easy thing to do, right? People that are using the 23andMe or one of those, you know, at-home DNA tests would recognize this, but you spit into it. Making sure that it's not foam, that it's actual spit. And then the most important part, the preservative that keeps the spit ready for the lab to do the test has to be preserved. So that we watch this whole thing. We have a very careful step of supervision, and that has given us the ability to claim. And I will tell you, after many, many, many tens of thousands of tests, zero failure on the test-taking part of this because we've been able to manage the whole process. That is why at-home tests that use those nasal swabs or anything that is unsupervised is a very risky proposition. Not that the test is going to fail by itself, but administering your own test when you don't, nobody in America is used to doing this. We don't know how to do this. So taking a test and risking that you're going to get a false negative is what we're worried about, meaning you get an answer back that says, oh no, you're fine. You don't have COVID. You're fine. That's a false negative if, in fact, you really do have it, but you did that nasal swab and got the wrong area of your nose or didn't get the virus on there. So we're very concerned about it, which is why we've invested in making it an at-home test. But let me answer your question about accuracy. This is a great question. So this is a genetic test. It's called a PCR test. So it's looking for three, and I don't do much science, but I think this is important for everybody to understand. Yeah. There are three genes that are common to every COVID variation that is traveling the world right now. And there's three genes. The test is looking for two of the three genes to, I sort of say, light up. If those two or three genes light up, you're positive. That means you actually have viral media in your body. If no genes light up, you're negative. So it's a very simple binary question. You either have it or you don't. And right. The sensitivity of this test tells us that you have had an infection between 2 and 28 days. It's that sensitive, which also indicates that most people don't start to see symptoms until sometime within 5 days. So this test actually can identify that you're infected even before you would know you're infected. And if you take it anytime in that 28-day period, the test is going to indicate positive. So we may not know which day you started, but we can definitely know that you're positive.
And this is specifically for COVID and not the antibodies. We're talking about COVID.
This is to know your exact status, positive or negative, which is, by the way, at this point, the only tests. Let me tell you about antibody tests too. You have to know today to get back to work, to get back on the playing field, to get back at school, to school, we got to know what your status is. To know that you have antibodies is not to know where you stand today. An antibody test that tells you that you've been infected is good to understand how the population at large may have been infected. That's an interesting study just to know where infection has been and where, you know, maybe it might go, because we can see people that don't have the antibodies. But that doesn't tell you right now if you're positive or negative. It doesn't give you any idea of what your current status is. So we need to do that first, the test that I'm describing. We need to know that the answer is, are you positive? Right. For antibody testing, this is a really important thing. We've had so much to still discover and learn about the virus and the resulting disease that comes from it. And one of the challenges with the antibody test is that there are so few people that we actually know the status of, because testing has been so limited, that we don't really understand what the population at large looks like and how many people have had false positives or false negatives. The antibody tests have been about 50% wrong to date. They don't give us a great answer. There haven't been high quality tests yet on the market that we have a lot of confidence in. But more than anything else about antibody tests, we have not seen this virus in the human body long enough to know whether or not we're building enough immunity that it will protect us from a reinfection. And so this is something that only time will tell the scientists as to whether or not the build of antibodies will keep you safe over the long term.
Right.
I will say, and listen, I'm not a scientist, but we're talking to enough of them on a daily basis that I'm parroting much of what I'm hearing in the science. A year from now, we should have a better sense of whether antibodies will protect us. And that will be the absolute authoritative way to get back to life as normal, save a vaccine, because then we will understand that if you have antibodies and it has been proven to keep you safe, everybody that doesn't have the antibodies yet is now at risk of future infection, and those people can stay safe while the rest of us that have been infected can go back to work. So there is a process that will happen.
So how far away are we? And again, I was having this conversation with my best friend, and we were both in agreement that in order to have, to really get people back to working, we need to have an at-home test that's almost similar to a pregnancy test, where you can just go to the drugstore, purchase it, or have it sent to your home, and you can take it multiple times. When you wake up in the morning, you're either, you know your status, you either go to school, you go to work, you go do whatever, or you don't. How far away are we from that, where just about anyone can be able to order as many tests as they want for, you know, I mean, pregnancy tests aren't cheap, but they're also not, you know, $100 either.
That's really the question. You know, today Vault has made it possible. If you go to our website, you can order a test as much as you want. And we have plenty of companies that are now serial testing. It's repeat tests to bring their employees back into work and to keep them at work safely. And plenty of employers who, for example, are testing their people to come back to work and then asking for voluntary hand raises on any symptoms that somebody feels or any infection exposure that they may have risked to go home and then raise their hand and request a test to be sent to them. So we're helping employers in that way. Your question is spot on. There are economists in education who have been out talking about for some time now, who have been talking about how to get America back to work. And it's going to take daily testing. I think we're going to see sometime very soon some sports leagues that are going to attempt to do daily testing of their players to bring sports back. It takes that level of funding and support to be able to afford it. Unfortunately, the test today at its basic core costs about somewhere between $65 and $75 just to run a test, let alone administering it and shipping it and all the other things that happen. So it's a built-in expense that just doesn't get much better in the short term. In the long term, it has to get cheaper, and we want it to get cheaper. We're doing this at cost, by the way. We're not making a profit, and every possible way that we can reduce the cost, we're working on right now, and I expect over time that's going to happen. But you know, the reality is this: most people don't need to test every day to know that they're safe. And here's why. The test that I described, when you spit in this tube and you do the saliva test, you're going to know if your behaviors that you've been, you know, managing over the last month have kept you safe. Because when that test comes back negative that I do not have the SARS-CoV-2 virus, I'm going to think, what have I done? Well, largely I've stayed in my home because we've kind of all been quarantining.
Right.
Or I've gotten back out into society, but I'm still wearing my mask. I'm staying away from people. I'm keeping my social distance, and I'm successful. I've so far been successful. And if I maintain that with probably at least a test a month, I'd say that for most employers now, that's probably the practical way of doing it, unless, again, somebody has come into contact with somebody that they're very worried about because that person has had COVID, or there's a symptom that they recognize which makes them nervous. Barring that, you know, that's probably the reasonable amount of testing. For employers that feel that they need to go to an every week test, I think at some level that's a little bit extreme. But there is a measure of making sure, again, that we're doing all the other things, not just testing, all the other things to stay safe and keep ourselves distant from the chance of infection.
So is your next step then to partner with employers? You know, there's so many companies that, you know, that's at the top of conversation right now. How do we get back? Are you now partnering with large corporations to provide this test so that even in the entertainment industry, you know, that hospitality entertainment industry, which lost so many jobs, I mean, even today, and today is Thursday, we have the unemployment insurance numbers that come out, people that are applying for unemployment benefits. It is now, I think it came in at 2.1 million people applied for unemployment insurance in the last week. The estimate was at 2 million. Are you actively looking for partners within corporate America? And what do those partnerships look like?
Yes. Well, yeah, I saw the same numbers you did. Can you believe 41 million people are unemployed in this country? It is.
I can't, and then I can. I mean, it makes complete sense given the economic devastation that's happened in the last 2.5 months. The economy came to a screeching halt.
It's dystopian. I go to the pharmacy down the street and I wait outside in line to get into the pharmacy. It feels like 1980s bread lines in the former Soviet Union. It's surreal. I think that the answer. Our belief, this is why I said our mission is very much about getting the economy, helping to get the economy restarted. And the only way I believe we can do this is not by one person at a time. It's by working with large organizations, and employers are the first line of defense. Because look, to get the economy back, you need people who have a motivation to help you bring people back to work. And the only way to get people back to work is if you can physically open up fulfillment centers, factories, you know, call centers, offices, and the like. And so we're building testing protocols that not just help employers get people back from home, which is our primary business, but we've also put new protocols in place to go in and do testing in factories and in distribution centers where employers can't risk having the population go home. They actually have to stay working in order to keep things moving. So we've built every accommodation that we can make. We're building the software or the process to see it happen and to help make it happen. The sports leagues that want to test their players. You could say, well, isn't that a little bit egregious right now because we can't get America back to work? No, we all want our sports back. We want some entertainment back in our lives. And these athletes are a huge part of our happiness. We absolutely want sports back. If sports can come back, that means other parts of the economy can come back, right? You still need the chicken wings to go enjoy your basketball game or your football game.
Of course.
Right? So getting the travel industry back in business. So we're working with companies. So every single day, when I tell you I've had probably several hundred phone calls in the last 2 weeks alone, it's the most surreal thing. A CEO will call me from a company, and these are people that I probably did book reports on when I was in high school, that are calling me saying, can you help us? I mean, it's that surreal to me. And they're saying, what does it take? How do we do this? We put somebody in charge of COVID, but I just need to know for myself, is it all about testing? Is it about social distance? And what I'm able to do and what our team is able to do now is share insights across industries. I had no idea that by helping nuclear power plants, we could actually help kids go back to summer camp. The protocols that the nuclear power plants are putting into place are some of the things that the summer camps need to do. And we're able to share that back and forth. And as a consequence, now kids are able to go back. Many kids are able to go back now into summer camps that are taking a chance because they're putting in enough protections to get them back, get the kids back to fun. So my view and our team's mission now is to make sure that if there is something that we can do to help, we will put forth every effort possible to attack head on what's going on. And one more thing. The country is remiss because the federal government hasn't decided to ever really take a leadership stance in putting contact tracing, knowing who you're coming in contact with that might be infected. But there are multiple organizations. My most favorite one right now is an app called Citizen. I don't know. A lot of people use it to see what's going on in their local communities, emergencies, and other, you know, things that are at risk. It's a great app called Citizen. We're talking with their leadership team about building contact tracing and testing together, where you're walking down the street, and because enough people belong to this app, to this service, it knows who's infected, who's been tested, who's at risk, and it can give you a report as you're walking by people as to whether or not you're okay or you should be cautious and have a risk that you should go manage with a test or some other quarantine.
So couple questions. The first one is, on that note, where do we stand in privacy? I mean, and this could be a bigger, you know, subject we can explore in like version two of this interview, but you know, I think you also run into privacy issues. How is this a conversation that you are also discussing with a lot of the corporations that are asking to potentially partner with you? And have you seen people just become more forthcoming about their health status? And, you know, even personally, you know, I'm running into issues with that within our own family. Not that my husband and I don't want to share our COVID status. The Libra knows that I took a test and I disclosed all of that information live on television or on our broadcast. But just in terms of contact tracing, how are people, do you feel that people are going to become more forthcoming about where they've been and be more willing to disclose that information just to get back out and start working and living their lives again?
If we think of COVID, a COVID diagnosis of positive as being a scarlet letter or a stigma, we're going to have a really serious problem. Uh-huh. Because if you depend upon, you know, I think of it a lot like the traffic lights or the stop signs on the street. Right. You know, if we all don't take it seriously and understand what it means, then the next person that comes down that street is not going to take it seriously either, and we're going to crash. And I feel the same way about work. I don't want to go back into an office where I'm not sure that everybody around me is taking their infection rate as seriously as I am. Right. Because the minute that the first person decides to come to work with the headache or whatever symptom that they may or may not feel, by the way, 35% of Americans right now are proving to be asymptomatically positive. No clue that they have a virus, but they're shedding infection. But nonetheless, if I'm not doing my part to be diligent about my PPE, about my testing, about any of the things that keep me safe, then why would I believe anybody else is doing that, such that we're going to all end up back at the office and some of us are going to end up getting sick and then we're all back out of the office and this economy never restarts? So yes, is there a trade-off to privacy? 100%. Are companies calling us and saying, how should we approach this? 100%. Most of the companies are saying, we're going to pay for testing, both mandatory testing to come back if you want to come back to the office. If you want to stay home, that's a choice. But you know, anybody with kids, and I've got three of them, wants to get back to the office as soon as possible. If you want to come back in, you test back in. Then beyond that, it's mostly voluntary testing. You think you need a test? Raise your hand, we'll get you a test. But the consequence of that, or maybe the responsibility that the employer is taking as a result of it, is to ask for the results. They want to know what the results are. They want to know that Jason took a test and that Jason is negative and Jason can come to work. And, you know, I had to think about that a lot for myself. I've worked in a lot of different companies before I did a startup, and I'm thinking about what I wanted and what I didn't want my employer to know. But the truth of the matter is, in this case, and this isn't selfish because, again, I could go either way, but I thought long and hard about it. If I share my results and everybody else does theirs and the employer knows who of us are sick and who of us are not sick, they're going to help maintain a healthy workplace and it's safe for me to go back. And if it isn't that I'm worried about myself, I don't want to bring COVID home to my kids and to my family. I don't. And I don't want it to be because somebody wasn't willing to share or wasn't honest. So I'm okay with it. And I think we're all in a new normal now. And listen, if my choice is to be employed or to be unemployed and my issue is around privacy, well, I think we're probably all going to come to the conclusion pretty quickly. We'd rather be employed and making a paycheck and giving up a measure of privacy that really has to do with our status than not.
So then you are on the forefront of having conversations with a lot of these biotech companies that are, I call it the race for the cure. I know that's a tagline for God's Love We Deliver, but you know, they're really trying to get this, between an antibody test and a vaccination out. We're seeing a lot of these different companies start human trials as soon as June. From what you've seen in the conversation that you've been a part of, are there specific biotechs that you think are more at the forefront than others?
Our general philosophy on this one has been, you know, race to the finish, race to the cure, race to whatever you're going to race to. 7 billion people need a vaccine. It's not happening soon. Unless there's something that none of us know exists today that's readily available in the market, we just haven't discovered that it cures COVID. And I don't think anybody believes that it exists today. Unless it exists, how anybody is going to produce any number of billions, you know, the population at large to the world or just any number of the percentage of the population, it's not coming in the next 2 years. It's not. So I don't see that becoming something that's going to change anything. So I think above all else, and we can keep hoping and praying and maybe something miraculous will happen, happen in the coming weeks and months, because the world is definitely focused on a common theme of let's get this fixed and get the scourge gone. But until that actually happens, the only way that we'll cure ourselves back to some new normal is to behave differently and to take seriously a new regimen that we don't all fully appreciate or understand yet until we kind of get back out of these stay-at-home orders and back into society, of how we're going to go eat in restaurants, how we're going to get on airplanes, how we're going to go stay at a hotel or travel for business, and how we're going to take care of our families and trust that they're doing the same. I think we're going to develop into this together, and we're going to see another wave of infection, whatever that means, hopefully nowhere near as serious as the first line, because we're doing things better and smarter now. Yeah. But we know it will come again, and that we'll be more prepared the next time to know what to do to try to maintain this new normal. It's just going to be how we all have to react. And I think if we let our guard down, we all know the consequences. We've just lived through it.
And I think new normal is an operative word. I mean, it certainly is the way we lived our lives prior to March 9th and now how we live our lives today. Jason, I want to thank you so much for being in here with us in this Elite Chat Room here. Elites, you know, I am Heather Herzog. I am host of the Elite Chat Room. Jason Feldman, CEO of Vault Health. Thank you so much again. Please come back. We want to hear about the more of the developments on this at-home test. And also, if people want to get more information about this test, or if they want a test, where should they go?
VaultHealth.com or VaultHealth.com/COVID. Either way, find us at Vault Health and we'll take care of you.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Jason. Thanks for being here.
Great to see you. Thanks for the invitation.
Well, that's a wrap for this episode. Thanks for listening. I invite you to visit RagingBull.com/podcast. That's RagingBull.com/podcast. To discover more episodes, to learn more about people who have created, built, and live successful lives. Also, remember to subscribe to one of Raging Bull's newsletters. Join me on the next episode as we share more stories from our guests on the wisdom behind wealth and how they built their own success. Raging Bull Podcast is brought to you by RagingBull.com, helping traders succeed through education, resources, and where you can watch real traders make trades. Raging Bull, learn to trade. We'll show you how.